The New Science of Physical Health.
Hey everybody, thank you so much for joining me here at this special episode of The New Science of Physical Health. If this is the first time you've ever joined me in this series and in this podcast, I want to share with you an interview that is one of my more extraordinary. So I'm Shane Stubbs, I'm the creator and the host. I've had this incredible career on the last 37 years now, I think it is. That's hard to say, to think it's been that long, where I've been in love with this topic that I've had the privilege of being involved in, this career of health, physical education, and sport. In particular, the New Science of Physical Health, this podcast focuses on the first component of what I just mentioned, health, physical education, and sport. And because I'm in love, my whole area has one mission. I want to help people drive down their clinical risk of the number one cause of sickness, disease, and death on a global basis, cardiovascular events, which, as we're going to show you throughout this whole podcast series that we have, that if you do that for cardiovascular events, you have a cascading effect, a spillover impact, where you lower your risk of the second leading cause of sickness, disease, and death, cancer events worldwide, and what we call all-cause mortality. That's a medical description from the PhDs that I interviewed over the past decade, over 100 of them now. And all-cause mortality means having a death from all types of sickness and disease. So the podcast, The New Science of Physical Health, has this obsession with developing tactics, skills, strategies to have an impact in your life and the lives of people that you care about and or are responsible for, depending on your profession as you listen to this. That's my only mission. Why? Those of you who've joined me regularly, you know my background story, which I'm not going to cover here because I want to get to today's guest, where my father, I got a phone call November the 1st, 1989 from my mum. And she says three words to me: love, dad's died. My father had passed away then in 1989 of a sudden massive heart attack. He was only age 46 years old. No warning, no symptoms, no anything. He just wakes up on November the 1st. His life ended on that day. Millions of people around the world, the same things happen to. We have listeners to this program in 87 countries right now at the time of recording and thousands of cities. I want to ask you a question. This is my special guest. Before I get to my special guest, so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to a little bit of commentary or narrative, and then you're going to hear my special guest. And then go back to a little bit of narrative, then you're going to hear my special guest. I want to ask you a question. Growing up, think about the world you live in. Think about the way that you grew up as a child, if you're not a child now listening to this program. I want to ask you this question. Have you ever been a person like me who's watched sport growing up and you've got some sporting heroes? Or if you're not a sport person, you've been into movies and you've got what you call heroes in the acting world. Or if you're not into acting, but you're into music, you've got heroes in the music world. Well, for me growing up, my heroes revolved around sport. I actually had a hero too in the acting world, but that was Sylvester Stallone from the Rocky movies, which I absolutely loved. Gee, I'd love to interview him one day. So imagine whatever field of, as you were growing up as a young person, to wherever, whatever age you are right now, think about the world you live in. Who would you like most to sit down and have dinner with? Like, for me, it's a sports star. I'd like to sit down and just have one-on-one chat with a professional sports star. One of my favorite sports growing up, it's not a worldwide sport, it's amongst most of the Commonwealth nations. So in countries like England, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, India, Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, those types of countries, up through all the British Isles, those types of countries play this professional sport called cricket. In fact, Australia and England have been playing this competition against each other every 2 years. It's called the Ashes since, 1882, like 140 years as I record this. So the question is, Who would you like most to sit down with? One of the people I would most like to have sat down with would be a professional cricketer from the Australian men's cricket team. That's what I would have liked to do as one part of my wish list. Well, I got the chance. So before I recorded this interview, maybe about 2 or 3 weeks before I recorded the interview you're about to hear, I got the opportunity to sit down with Australian cricket sports legend and opening batsman, Justin Langer. Now, Justin Langer has also gone on, you'll hear about it in a minute, to become the Australian men's cricket coach in a time of deep crisis for Australian cricket, and he guided us through that. So I got to sit down with Justin. Here's the quick version of the story. He and I in Sydney at a restaurant. He was over here in Sydney from Perth in Australia to sit down. He was filming an ad for the Salvation Army. He was doing some volunteer work, I think, for that at that particular time back in, I don't know, the mid-2010s, something like that. So and I got through someone who Justin knows, another professional sports player, an AFL player. I got to sit down with Justin one-on-one. He and I had dinner at a hotel together. And here was the interesting thing. If you follow the sport of cricket, if you're one of my listeners from overseas, you might not know what the sport of cricket is. But if you follow the sport of cricket, we have a one-day game, an international one-day game being played between Australia and England. And Justin and I were sitting at a hotel in Sydney. He'd retired. He wasn't the coach of Australia at this time. He'd retired, and we were having dinner, but on the TV in the place we were having dinner behind us in the hotel was a one-day game. And all of Justin's former teammates were still playing cricket. Not all of them, but some of them, many of them, were playing cricket. One of them, the Australian captain, was a guy called Ricky Ponting. Ricky Ponting took a catch off one of the batsmen, and it was a really spectacular catch. I think it was at gully or at slip, and it was a magnificent catch. And Justin turns to me and says, "Punter." That was his nickname of Ricky Ponting. "Punter, still the best fielder in Australian cricket." That was back at that time that we were sitting there. And I'm thinking there, I'm in a bit of like some kind of movie scene, because I'm sitting with this guy, Justin Langer, having this phenomenal time, just chatting over some of the things that, and the reason I was there was related to setting up the interview you're about to hear. So I wanted to talk to Justin and record him talking about leadership applied to your health outcomes. So here's what we're going to do right now. I'm going to stop talking. I'm going to transfer for all of my non-cricket followers across the different countries that listen to this program. Like I said, there's 87 countries. The majority of you don't play cricket. You haven't heard of the sport. You're going to have to go look it up. So for all of those, I'm going to give you about 1 minute of the introduction to an Amazon Prime documentary that was on the Australian cricket team a couple of years ago when Justin, who had retired from being a player, became the Australian men's cricket coach. And there was a time of deep crisis in Australian cricket, and I won't go into what that's all about. So I'm going to give you about 1 minute of this Amazon Prime intro right now, and then I'm going to cut straight into Justin talking. Justin's going to talk for about 5 or 6 minutes in the first part about how he became a professional cricketer. It's really fascinating stuff. Righto, here it is, the Amazon Prime intro of the Australian cricket team, of which Justin was the coach at the time, and then straight into Justin talking about how did he become a professional player. It's going to really relate to the back end of this episode where we start applying leadership skills to health outcomes.
Some tests last 5 days. Theirs lasted 2 years. Reputation broken. Character questioned. All eyes were on them, waiting for them to slip.
That is pressure.
When the weight of the nation meets the eyes of the world, you either toughen up or tough it out.
Watch. Oh, he's done it.
Oh,
he's
field of team out of you blokes.
Getting piled on the Aussies now.
Ah!
Come in,
fans, this is Australia.
With unprecedented access,
Steve Smith is back.
Join the Australian cricket team as they face the test.
This is a complete Cinderella story, this.
Yeah, I guess from my point of view, I was like most Australian kids, it was footy in the winter and cricket in the summer. Mm. And I went to my last year at school in 1987. I actually got selected to go on a combined schoolboys tour to England. Now, that was a bit of a risk in the sense that I was taking 5 weeks out of my TEE year, which we call it over here in Perth, our last year at school. And it was just before the Alco Cup, which is the school's footy competition. But I went to England, and that was probably the turning point for me because, one, I played cricket every single day for 4 or 5 weeks, as they do in England. I was billeted out by a couple of young blokes by the name of the Bicknell brothers who both played for England. And, and I remember them because I was fascinated that these guys could actually get paid to play cricket, and they'd play cricket day in, day out, as professionals. So I stayed with them for a few days. And then on that tour, I was lucky enough to score 100 at Lord's. And the thing about that was, one, I was getting 100 at Lord's, but the second thing was running around to the red phone box in the grounds of Lord's and reverse charging mum and dad, which was probably 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning back here, to tell them I'd scored 100 at Lord's. I remember how excited they were about that. I also, after that innings, was given a bat contract from Gun and More Cricket Gear, which was, again, for a 16-year-old kid, you know, you've made it. Not only got 100 at Lord's, you're playing cricket every day, and you're enjoying the life of a tourist, because I was, you know, it was my first, what I call, real cricket tour. Now I was also getting given cricket gear, so I got back to Perth after that tour, which was a great time of my life. Played my last game of footy then, so as a 17-year-old. And as they say, the rest is history. I went to uni for a year and realised I wanted to be a professional cricketer, so I started going to England. I started developing my game. I went to the Cricket Academy. I was invited to go there, and then things, I guess, went from strength to strength. There's obviously lots of downtime or lots of disappointing parts of those younger years. All the insecurities and everything that go with it. But as it turned out, I was fortunate to get selected for Australia in 1993, playing the West Indies. Australia lost that test by one run. It was the famous test match, Adelaide Oval test match. And after that, I was dropped. I went to the New Zealand, having played 5 tests. I was dropped from the Australian side. And in the next 5 years, I played 3 test matches. So, again, that was a very important time for me because I had to learn how to get better. You know, to be in the Australian cricket team, there's only 11 players selected from the country, and you've got to be the best of the best. So I had to get physically and mentally and technically, probably spiritually stronger. And then the opportunities came along from there. In 1998, I started in a more regular position, batting number 3. 2001, I got dropped again and then came back as an opener. And then a lot of people remember me as an opening batsman, but I only really did the second half of my career as an opening batsman. So the highlight of my cricket career was...
Okay, we've just cut it off for a second there. What was the biggest highlight of Justin Langer's cricket career? You're going to find that out in just a moment. I wanted to have two minutes with you here to build in this narrative around this interview that I did with Justin, because this is important about leadership skills applied to your health outcomes. If you're going to ever drive down your risk of a cardiovascular event, and your clinical risk, by the way, not just like this some random kind of statement that I'm making, the tools that we have with our health lab, the two health technologies, one is for food, one is for physical activity, that give you real-time feedback. So we have this thing, if you haven't been with me in this program before, called the Health Lab, the PE Teachers Health Lab that I created, has 3 main components. But 2 of those components of the platform are health-related technologies that give you real-time feedback as to the impact of any planned and unplanned physical activity, and also the real-time feedback on whether you're burning fats or carbohydrates. It's not like actual data feedback from your eating. So the whole concept here is this. You can have the best tools, and we do, and the most clinically validated health tools, technologies in the world, and we do. That's not for this episode to go into. But the challenge that I have in answering the question right at the front end of this podcast is the bulk of people are disengaged and disinterested in their lives with their own personal health outcomes. Why are heart attack, stroke, and other serious forms of cardiovascular events, and there's many of them, why are they the number one cause of sickness, disease, and death on a worldwide basis? Because that's the thing that goes wrong with the human body first. But the challenge is I can have the best tools in the world, but if I can't help, and we do, we've got these incredible pieces of technology. I won't go into a metabolic analyzer and a health impact software that are all clinically validated. And they will change your life in terms of giving you real-time feedback of your health outcomes. But that's not the first part of the problem. The first part of the problem is how do we get people to fall in love with wanting to be physically healthy when the overwhelming majority of adults in the community that you live in, any one of the 87 countries that listen to this program at the time of recording, could be up to more now, I haven't checked recently, that in the community that you live in, the majority of adults are disengaged. The question is, how do you get them to become engaged? All right, back to now, because answering that question is what today's guest does. I want you to tune into the next section where Justin Langer, this Australian sports legend, speaks about having a vision. Then I'm going to come back and we're going to talk about applying that to health outcomes. This is a great part of the interview right now.
Being part of the 16 straight winning test matches, and it's hard enough to win two consecutive test matches. In that era, we won 16 straight. So you know, I learned a lot about winning. I learned a lot about the importance of team and discipline and everything that goes with being successful. So that was another great era of my life.
What are some of the framework that you would want to teach people, communicate to people on how to have some personal leadership, whether it's in their health area or spiritual area, whatever it might be, if we were sending this message out to other people?
Yeah, there's a number of areas. One is that I think vision's a really important thing. By vision, you know, it comes in all sorts of different frameworks. People call it dreaming, people call it goal setting, call it vision, call it what you like. But for me, one of the most important thing about any form of leadership, whether it's personal leadership or leadership without a title, or whether you're leading teams or corporations, is that you have to have vision. You have to have an idea of where you want to go in your life, whether it's, again, whether it's with your technical skills or whether it's how you are physically or where you are mentally or where you are spiritually. You've got to have an idea of where you're going in your life. It's a bit like if I said to you, Troy or Shane, take me to Shane Street in Bassendean, Perth. And you might go, well, what do you mean? I said, well, just drive me there, will you? Will you please drive me to that street? And you go, well, I don't know how to get there. I said, oh, all right. But having a vision is a bit like having a roadmap. You know, if you've got an idea, if you can look it up and say, oh, there's that street in Bassendean, Perth. Okay, I can go there. Now, along the way, if you've got a roadmap, well, you're still going to have, you might get a flat tire, or there still might be an accident, or there still might be traffic jam, or you still might get distracted along the way, but at least you've got an idea how to get there. If you don't have an idea of where you're going, then what will happen, or there's two things that will happen. You might get there by an absolute fluke, or you eventually give up. You'll get frustrated, you'll give up and say, this is too hard, and go home. So having a vision of knowing where you want to be personally or with your group or business or team, you have to have an idea of where you're going to go in your life, and that's the first thing. The second thing is probably my favourite saying in life.
Oh, I could sit there and listen to that kind of content all day. For me, as a person growing up loving sport, and now as I've gotten older, I've transitioned to health, although I still love sport. I say to my son all the time, he's a swimmer, I love being involved in teaching health and physical education and sport. I love coming home at the end of the day. I'll watch more sport on television. How many occupations do you know that? Where it's like you're involved in it all day and the thing you do to relax is come home and watch some professional sport on television. I absolutely love it. The reason I could listen to that all day is because that's somebody who doesn't just talk about vision and having a vision for your health and having a roadmap. He's not just talking about that. He's lived that both as a professional athlete and also as a professional sports coach of the Australian men's cricket team. And he really did help our team through a time of crisis and without question, the right person to lead us through and guide us down out of a very dark hole in to do with Australian cricket between Australia and South Africa, which those of you who follow cricket, you'll know what I'm talking about. Those of you who don't worry about it. But there was a deep time of crisis in the Australian men's cricket team, and Justin Langer was the guy that got us out of that. So the question I ask for every person who listens to this audio episode, and another minute with me, and then we're back to Justin in the second thing that he loves. The question that I have to ask you is this. How many people do you know, if you have a vision for your physical health outcomes, how many people do you know around you that have got one themselves? Or if you don't have one, how do you go about creating it? I made a decision in my own life a number of years ago to start interviewing, working with, and consulting with PhDs from around the globe in areas like cardiology, exercise physiology, oncology, which is cancer, molecular biology, medicine, public health, cognitive neuroscience, and the list goes on. Because I became fascinated with how do you take their complex medical research and turn it into simple lessons that we can all use. Then I found along the way professors who had invented clinically validated health technologies that will give you the impact of knowing in real time whether what you're doing is actually driving down your risk of a clinical risk of a heart attack, a stroke, an aneurysm, high blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, metabolic disease, the list goes on. How do you know if it's actually changed? So I found these technologies. And I now use them inside the PE Teachers Health Lab. It's a box that I can give any person and say, take this, this will change your life. But the great thing is people have got to have a vision to be out in the first place. And the third part of the Health Lab that we have, that creates the vision and teaches people how to go down that pathway. It teaches people how to get out of being disengaged with their health outcomes and how to actually fall in love with wanting to be physically healthy so that you can create molecular and physiological health adaptations that have a linear correlation with decreasing your risk of cardiovascular events, cancer events, and all causes of sickness, disease, and premature death. All right, now back to Justin. Let's get back now. What's the second thing that he talks about? Love that stuff about vision. And we teach you in the Health Lab how to create your own vision for your health outcomes and how to actually achieve it and prove that you've achieved it for yourself or in other cases for large cohorts. So then how do you, here's the question. What's the second thing that you need to have that Justin's about to talk about? Let's go right now back to Justin.
There's the pain of discipline. There's nothing like the pain of disappointment. Now, in Australia, in fact, around the world, if you use the word discipline, everyone gets scared. You know, they say, oh, you know, discipline, I think you've got to be a Zen monk and sit in freezing cold water and meditate for hours on end. Well, that's not discipline. Discipline's actually in the choices you make day in, day out. Discipline is how you think. Discipline is in your actions and making choices which are going to take you towards that vision that you have for yourself personally or collectively. So discipline's a really important thing, you know, what you eat, what you do, what you think, all those things. But the pain of discipline is nothing like the pain of disappointment. Invariably, if you don't have discipline in your life in all those areas, well, then you're going to become frustrated and you're going to become disappointed. And we all know that feeling of disappointment when things don't go well because you've let yourself down and you've let other people down is a really strong motivator not to go there again. So the pain of discipline is nothing like the pain of disappointment. Justin, bad luck with Glenn McGrath getting injured, but we neglected our disciplines, and we probably did because we had been winning so easily and had become so successful. We probably had started neglecting the little disciplines that worked so well for us in our preparation, in our training, in everything we were doing. So, and we got bitten on the backside because of that. But the great thing was we decided, we recognised that, and losing, the pain of disappointment was the thing that kicked us back into gear. And from there, it was just, it was relentless. It was a ruthless pursuit from 11 or 12 or 13 talented individuals to ensure we got back the Ashes. And look, a really simple little example was that for 18 months, we decided that our catching was going to be pivotal in us winning back the Ashes. So, honestly, we had hours and hours and hours of extra catching that no other team in the world would have been doing, the extras I'm talking about. But we worked. It was unbelievable. And I remember thinking to myself, what are we doing? Like, my hands are killing me. Oh, this is getting boring. Da-da-da. We had all these things going, but the little disciplines. And I'll never forget it. We played talking about the MCG, and that was quite, when I started visualising that half of the MCG with 90,000 people die every year. I mean, that's a pretty strong vision, I have to say, just in that. But we played the fourth test. It was actually the test before I retired, and we got to a point, and a guy named Paul Collingwood, who plays for England, smashed this cricket ball at me. I was at short cover off Shane Warne's bowling, and I took this catch, which was a pure instinct reflex catch, and I just thought at that moment, as I'm standing there, we realised then that we're going to win the test match 4-0. I've got my 10 teammates around giving a hug. There was probably 80,000 at the MCG. I was just standing there with that ball in my hands thinking, you know what, after all that hard work and all those times where I thought, is this worth it, is it worth it, is it worth it? As I'm standing in the MCG with all those people screaming and my mates around me just about to win, that's when it dawned on me, you know what, those little disciplines, those little hard works, those little choices we made to get better, it's actually come for one, and it was a quarter of a second in my life that took me to catch the ball. But I still remember it so clearly, that all the work we'd done, and it all came into fruition, and it was just a great reminder to me that if you work hard and you make great choices, and if you work really hard on something, there'll be a little magic moment in your life. And that was a magic moment for me and for my team, and for probably all the Australian supporters in the crowd. I thought, you know what? You work hard to enjoy these magic moments, and to ensure that you have success, again, personally and collectively. Yeah, it's been very powerful for me that, in fact, crucial, that it's one thing to have dreams and visions, but if those dreams and visions are just words, then, you know, I mean, it's still good to have them, but if you write them down, and then you're almost committing to it. If you write things down, you're committing to wanting to achieve it, and then therefore putting the work that's required into achieving those things. So I'm writing down, well, for me personally, writing down my goals has been a crucial part of any success I've been able to achieve. Moments, or what did your friend call them?
Mountaintop moments.
Yeah, mountaintop moments. And the reality is they last for about 1 second or 5 seconds or maybe 2 minutes or 5 minutes in your life, but it takes hours and hours and hours and hours almost to earn the right to have those mountaintop moments or those magic moments. So it is a disciplined pursuit, whether, as I said, physically, I mean, the better you are, the better physical shape you're in as an athlete, the better you're going to move, the more hard work you put into to getting to that position physically, the stronger your mind inevitably is. So the training has, for me, physical training is such an important, not only for health reasons, but for mental health reasons, for how you feel about yourself. Physical training is just such an important part of life. And what for me, I retired from cricket 5 months ago, but if I don't do some training every day, I get grumpy, and my wife knows that, and she knows if I just go out for have my half an hour walk or run or get out and do, you know, whatever training I can every day, well, then she'll know that I feel happy about it. And I think it's an important thing that people do take the time. You might find that not only will you be physically fitter, but you'll find yourself happier because you'll be happier with yourself. And it's almost like meditation. If you're out, a lot of people talk about meditation. If you take the time to do some training, it's almost like meditating every day. And meditation is a very, very powerful part of well-being. Oh, yeah, well, look, it's a bit like getting your cholesterol down to 2.0. Athletes like to get their skin folds down to a certain degree. It's just measurable goals, basically. So you like to get your skin folds, or you like to have your strength at a certain, whether it's doing a certain amount of chin-ups or push-ups or sit-ups. They're measurable, and that, again, that's why goals are so important, because if you're seeing development, if you're seeing skill development, or you see yourself reaching certain targets, well, it gives you inspiration and motivation to keep going. I mean, if you're one of the most powerful things for me is improving your skills, because actually, if you see improvement, you want to keep doing more. What often happens is people don't have the motivation, they don't have the drive to start skill improvement. And what I mean by skill improvement, that means dropping your weight or achieving different targets. Whatever that target is, targets are very important because it gives you the motivation to get out of bed every day and to get better. And that's always been a strong philosophy within the Australian cricket team, and it's a very strong philosophy with the most successful people I've met, that they get out of bed every day looking to get better, looking to improve, not settling for where they're at, and just always looking for that constant improvement. So that's where targets are powerful. That's where having measurable targets, like we just talked about physically, are important, because it gives you the motivation and the strength of mind to keep going forward.
Once again, everybody, that is content for me. As so I'm sitting there talking on the phone in this conversation with one of my sports heroes, Justin Langer, that is content that I could listen to all day. Primarily because there's a famous American football coach called Vince Lombardi. This is the reason I love the content that you've just heard from Justin. Vince Lombardi had this statement, where I'll try and get this right because I haven't got the notes in front of me, but in my mind, this is the statement that he made, where he said, example is not the main thing, it's the only thing when it comes to success in any area of life. Example is not the main thing, it's the only thing. The reason I love what Justin talks about when he talks about the pain of discipline is more powerful than is better than the pain of disappointment, the part he started out that section on. The pain of discipline is better than the pain of disappointment. The reason I love that is because you're hearing a man who's lived it his entire life. It was no picnic for him making the Australian team. There was no walk-up start. It's not like he didn't have to overcome obstacles and hurdles along the way to become who he was. Yes, he was talented, but along the way, he had to apply himself. When it comes to the pain, that statement that he made, the pain of discipline is better than the pain of disappointment, I want to bring you back to my world, the new science of physical health, and getting people to fall in love with, whether that's you or the people that you love or the people you're responsible for, getting people to fall in love with their physical health status and just wiping out their risk to the lowest point possible from a cardiovascular event, a cancer event. Not saying those things can't happen. What I'm saying is we can change the structural, we can, with our tools, change your structure, physical structure of your blood vessels, physical structure of your heart, and have you in a position where it's almost impossible to get high blood pressure. It's almost impossible to have high levels of LDL blood cholesterol. It's almost impossible for you to have three or more of the signs or three or more of the classifications in something called metabolic syndrome. It's almost impossible for you to be obese or overweight. We can do all of those things if we don't have... I want to make a bit of a stipulation here. In order to be classified as physically healthy, from a medical perspective, there is some data that we have inside our health lab that I've created with these two technologies that you will reach a point where you're classified as physically healthy. I will make this statement. You don't have to be an athlete and put in a sports person's level of physical performance or sports person's level of high intensity discipline in order to become classified as physically healthy. That's a very important distinction. Health adaptations that will drive down molecular and physiological health adaptations that change the structure and improve the structure of your blood vessels, improve the structure of your heart and other parts of your cells, they don't require, to achieve that doesn't require the dedication it took for Justin to become an Australian cricket player, a dedication it took for him to lead the Australian cricket team as the men's coach. It doesn't take that. But it does take some discipline. And it does take some level of consistency, and it does take you or people switching away from the lack of vision and the lack of discipline, which is if you're in a position where you've been unhealthy and you've reached that point, I want out, I want to be physically healthy, I don't want to have a major blockage in my artery coming out of my heart where it puts me at risk of a heart attack in my 40s, like my father. He wasn't at a risk, he just died. Straight away, one symptom, sudden death, which is a huge percentage of people that have heart attacks. There are 18 million heart attacks worldwide on a yearly basis. As you listen to this, there are another 18 million people who have a heart attack or a stroke and they survive temporarily, but maybe not the same as they ever were before. My goal and mission, my obsession is to change that. What you just heard from Justin, here's the thing. This is what I love about the statement. I've just mentioned it because he's real. He's lived it. But this is what I love when you bring it back to my world, the new science of physical health. If my father had taken on board Justin's idea of vision and Justin's idea of discipline and had fallen in love with his physical health outcomes, he'd still be here today, most likely. Very low risk of him having a heart attack or a stroke. He certainly wouldn't have died at 46. He may have met his grandson, my son. So my son's name is Robert. My middle name is Robert. My dad's middle name was Robert. And my grandfather's middle name was Robert. And I look at that kind of thing and I go, my son just sees black and white photos of his grandfather, who the age doesn't go past 46. So in our family, the pain of disappointment was the fact that I wished my father could have had the health lab and it would have taught him some of the things. I wish he'd had this interview with Justin. But that hadn't happened until years later. Wish I could go back in time to 1985 when Justin played in 1983 in the Australian cricket team. Wish I could go back to 1985 and hand my father this interview. Hand my father the two health technologies that we have inside the health lab. Hand him the future-focused learning portal that's the third component of the health lab. But I can't do that. I can't go back in time. The only thing I can do is share what Justin has shared with me, with you. That's all I can do. This is just an entry point. This is not the whole health lab. This is an entry point into you beginning to discover how you can take on attitudes and a thinking pattern that will help you to become at low risk, low clinical risk of the biggest cause of sickness, disease, and death, cardiovascular events. The thing to do now is that there is so much more for you to consume, and there's actually two things you need to do. You need to, as Justin talked about there in terms of goal setting and discipline, you need to know, you need to get access to our health impact software, and you need access to our metabolic analyzer inside the health lab. One gives you real-time data about food consumption and coaching about the impact on fat burning versus carbohydrate burning. And the other one, the health impact software, gives you real-time data on is the planned and unplanned physical activity you did today enough to create health adaptations that drive away your risk of a cardiovascular event. It's that simple. Then the third component is I've taken all the interviews I've done with over 100 PhDs and flipped them into simple lessons that you can use that will help you to decipher and decode this complex medical research. The really simple stuff. And that's the goal of a teacher, to take complex stuff and make it simple that people want to get interested in it. All right, everybody, thank you so much for joining me at this episode. More importantly, I'd like to publicly thank Justin for a few years ago now, spending time with me in this interview. His impact is so significant. It's at the front end of all of the work that we do. Because it's great to have our technologies, our two clinically validated health technologies inside our health lab. It's great to have a future-focused learning portal. But the greatest problem of the... I read this paper a long time ago, the biggest public health problem of the 21st century. And this professor did research over 15 years, and he titled his research at the end, the biggest public health problem of the 21st century. And it was a medical problem, he claims. And I wrote an article a while back now that I don't believe that what he wrote as research, and it was one of the biggest pieces of research that's ever produced, was published in 2009, and it's a great piece of medical research. I don't believe what he wrote is the biggest public health problem, this area of medical. We go into it in the lab. I won't go into it here. The biggest public health problem of the 21st century is people aren't in love with wanting to be healthy. What you just heard today, that helps you to understand how you can go down that pathway, vision and discipline. So a big public thank you to Justin Langer. What a tremendous human being. We had private dinner together at a hotel, watched some cricket together, and I met him a few more times and I did that interview. What a tremendous, tremendous human being, and a deeply caring man about helping other people to achieve in life. But in this case, we're applying it to your leadership skills of vision and discipline to your physical health outcomes. That's it, everybody. Bye for now. Have a great day wherever you're up to. Get tucked into other episodes. We've got so much more great content to share. Bye for now.
Thank you for joining us in today's episode of The New Science of Physical Health. We hope you have found the education content informative and enjoyable, and will share it with others. In today's episode, Shane made reference to a brand new project that will be released in early 2024 called The Perfect Health Lesson. If you would like to find out more about this project right now and get access to its pre-release, then go ahead and visit the website in the show notes for today's episode.